Hi, everybody. Welcome along to this Friday freebie edition of the Dispatches podcast. My name is Brendan Malone. It is great to be back with you again. And today we have another episode of Dispatches with Diwa. Lots of stuff to talk about this month. And don't forget, the second episode, we always break this conversation into two parts. And the second part is available exclusively to our $5 monthly patrons. So if you want to hear part two on Monday, go to patreon.com/leftfootmedia and become a $5 monthly patron. The link is in today's show notes. A huge thank you to our patrons. It's thanks to you that we can keep producing all of this great content. So without any further ado, let's have a listen to this latest edition of Dispatches with Diwa. Welcome to Dispatches with Diwa, the monthly episode of the Dispatches podcast where we talk with political commentator Diwa de Boer about exactly what is going on in the world of New Zealand politics, and we discuss and dissect everything that's trending globally as well. Diwa de Boer is a political commentator who runs conservative think tank Right Minds New Zealand. He also writes a column for the BFD, and he has a Friday morning radio show on Reality Check Radio. He advocates for a return to tradition, is optimistic about the future, and he lives in Auckland with his wife and their three kids. So without any further ado, let's get into this episode of Dispatches with Diwa. Diwa, welcome back. We're going to dive straight into it because we are literally on the clock. You have another appointment after this one. You're a busy man, highly sought after.
Yes, welcome back. Thanks for having me back. I'm used to being in the driver's seat of these. When I do the shows for Reality Check Radio and everything else. So anyway, thanks for having me on as a guest. It's good to be in the relaxed seat for a change.
Ah, Diwa, it's always good to have you here. For those who are new here, this is the free-to-air episode. We also have a patrons-only episode that is behind the paywall every Monday. So, not every Monday, but the Monday after we do the free-to-air. So next Monday, if you want that, become a $5 monthly patron at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. We're going to be talking about the Benjamin Doyle scandal, among other things, behind the paywall. But before we do that, let's jump into in this free-to-air episode, Diwa. Everybody, and I mean everybody, if they're not panicking, they're talking about the Trump tariffs. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I guess the question that's on everyone's mind, or everyone seems to be an expert on, but what do you think? Do you think tariffs will actually work?
Well, speaking of being an expert, I am a total expert on tariffs. I have been reading about them for the last 3 days, so I think I'm highly qualified to speak about tariffs. And it's a very interesting situation. And the what was the term that Trump came up with or one of the people on his team, the panicans, the people who are panicking, are the panicans. So you're either a plan truster or a panican.
Yeah,
somebody who is panicking. For New Zealand, I think we are probably, at least on a whole, unaffected in many ways, at least by these tariffs in terms of trade with America. We do seem to have certain industries like the wine industry with quite a lot of trade to America that might be impacted, but it'll only be impacted if the Americans buy less of our stuff, right? If they look at the 10% price hike on the shelf, or say the American companies look at our companies and say, "Well, we're going to cut 10% off your what we're taking from you." Those kinds of things could have an impact on us. But the biggest thing seems to be the global stock market, and of course the possible ramifications for global trade. Say if China is completely cut out of the American market. That could have massive ramifications for everybody else.
Well, that's really developed in a big way today, hasn't it? Because before we went to air, this was just sort of like a general global trade war, it seemed. But now it does look a little bit like as of today, so about, 10 hours or so ago, when Trump announced that there was a three-month hiatus for everybody else. And now there's going to be, 125% they're up to now on China? So this is starting to look like it may well have been aimed largely at China from the very beginning.
Yeah, yes. So people don't seem to understand Trump and his art of the deal and the way that Trump deals, but it's quite transparent, actually, at least it is to me, with what Trump wants to achieve. He's usually very open about it. He campaigned about this. This was a big theme of his first administration. He just didn't get around to doing something this big. But basically, it's an anti-China policy, right? This is a realignment of the global order.
Yeah.
And we've had this build up between China and America in particular in the last few decades. And this is effectively Trump's attempt to keep America as the dominant power and to cut China out.
Yeah. You
know, it's like there can only be one global power. and it looked like for many, many years that eventually China would eclipse the United States. And this seems to be his move to ensure that America remains dominant in global affairs and they remain in charge of the rules. We talk about the rules-based global order, which has basically just been, you know, whatever America wants. And it's sort of been shifting away from that to these nebulous global organizations and these secret backroom deals of billionaires and stateless corporations and other scheming bureaucrats at the United Nations and other, you know, World Trade Organizations and so on. And things have been moving away from, say, the man sitting in the White House calling the shots. And Trump seems to say, you know, we're going to bring things back to the man in the White House calling the shots. Whether it's going to be better or worse, I don't know, but it's nice to have some transparency on there, to have somebody you can look at and say, well, that's the guy who's in charge and we can see what he's thinking, we can see what he's doing. And he has a plan. I haven't read through all of the documents that his team put out over the last few months, but they put out their trade plan, their plan to realign the global order. Trump has promised these tariffs as part of his campaign platform. We've always known that they were coming. It's a question of course, basically, can people resist? Can people make him back down? Can the markets be spooked enough? Can enough pressure be put on the Federal Reserve, say, to sort of overthrow Trump's plan? And we've seen this in the past. Like, they were very open about this with Liz Truss in the United Kingdom. If you remember Liz Truss, became prime minister for like 20 days. She had this big plan to change the economic situation in the United Kingdom, and the, you know, the banks in the United Kingdom basically ran a scheme behind her back to force her out of the prime ministership. So they like tanked the market to get rid of her on purpose. And they came out afterwards and openly said, yeah, that's what we did. We literally ran a coup against the prime minister because we didn't like her economic plan.
That's right.
So this would happen in New Zealand potentially as well. If you had a prime minister who wanted to do something drastic, you would then have essentially a coup d'etat behind the scenes, or quite openly, really, from these shadowy figures. Well, we know who they are, usually.
And that kind of raises an interesting thing here, too, isn't it? Because we talk about free trade, and everyone's going, oh, the free trade. It's like, has it ever really been free trade? I don't think so. The powerful have done what they've always wanted to do.
Yeah, and we talk about free trade. So if you look at a speech that Luxon made today, a big business speech about free trade, and we're going to try and increase our trade with these other nations and collaborate and come up with, make deals with them because we love free trade. But it's like, well, if we have free trade, then why do we need to make deals with these nations?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Like, obviously, if we need to be making deals with them, it's because there's no free trade. So a lot of this free trade, free trade is, and I'm not against free trade, but it's about, you know, it's a negotiation for bringing down barriers and being able to move goods that are in our favor, hopefully. A lot of countries protect some of their industries and they protect some of their goods, especially farmers. And we would do the same here in New Zealand. You talk about, say, the European Union. That was a big focus of Luxon's speech. We're going to have more trade with the European Union. The European Union is one of the most protectionist organizations in the world.
Yeah.
When you're talking about trade barriers, the European Union nearly destroyed the New Zealand economy in the 80s because Britain joined the European Union, the common market, and due to their trading rules, their protectionist rules, it nearly completely destroyed the New Zealand economy. And then you've got Luxon saying, oh, yes, we love free trade. The European Union's going to give us a good deal. Sorry, they nearly destroyed the country 50 years ago.
Yeah, and it's not that, and we're not even just talking about tariffs in that case. We're talking about literal rules about what a product has to be, how it should be packaged, the whole shebang, you know?
Yeah, and New Zealand has these too. We don't have tariffs on American goods. No, we have biosecurity rules, yeah. Right? So yeah. American farmers cannot sell their produce in New Zealand because of biosecurity rules. It's illegal to import American beef and American whatever else into New Zealand. Like, it would be a crime. You'd go to prison.
Yeah.
And so we can talk about free trade all we want, but it's really about dealing, you know, countries making deals and seeing who can get the upper hand and which special interests fare better. And we refer to that as quote unquote free trade.
Well, it's what's really interesting is I was out for my walk this evening and I was just sort of catching up on some news clips and things like that. And I was listening, I can't remember his name for the life of me, but I was listening to an American businessman who actually has companies and he trades in China. And he was saying, they asked him about this and he said, I would love it if he put a 400% tariff on China. He said, our IP is constantly being stolen. They don't play by the rules. You know, you have this supposed manufacturing advantage, but in actual fact, they steal your IP and then release a cheap version of it. This whole idea that China is somehow a Western free market player, that's not their game. They're happy to exploit the Western market.
China's in it for China, of course.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And you were just talking about cheap knockoffs. Yeah, there was a product I was looking at today, looking at it in New Zealand, and then I thought, I'll just have a quick look on AliExpress, and they've got all the Chinese knockoffs that look exactly the same as this product that's made in New Zealand. Why is that? Well, it's because the New Zealand product is manufactured in China, and when it's manufactured in China, they steal the IP, as you say, and they just make a cheap knockoff version of it, and they'll sell it back to you. And of course, this goes for you know, everything else. So Trump in particular has a vendetta against China. And from the beginning, if you look at the trade, you know, he had this weird maths of like which countries were ripping off the United States, and they had like trade imbalance, and they put all these weird numbers in place, and people were overanalyzing these numbers. But I just looked at the country, like which countries had high numbers against the name. And they were basically all of these East Asian, South Asian countries. Yeah. One, and most of them closely related to, you know, who'd closely work with China. And so basically he was targeting the Eastern Bloc. That's what I could see from the beginning. And it seems that it's not specifically the Eastern Bloc, but specifically China that he has targeted. And that's what he seems to have done the art of the deal, where he's made outrageous statements, everyone panics. And then he says, okay, everyone gets 10%, China gets 125%.
Yeah.
And everyone calms down, and like all the markets, you know, the free markets and the stock exchanges are green. The line goes up. It's like, this is what he wanted from the, like, if you had asked me on day one of him announcing the tariffs, I'd be like, well, what he actually wants is to take down China and to put a reasonably flat tariff on everybody else. Because that's what it, you know, if you looked at most of the countries on the list had a 10% tariff. So I could see he just wants to put a 10% tariff on stuff across the board, which is fine. It's a way of levying taxes. Every tax disincentivizes certain behavior. Every tax punishes certain behavior. And he said he wants to get rid of the federal income tax. I don't know if that's going to happen, but he said that's what he wants to do. If you want to get rid of the federal income tax, well, you need to have tariffs.
Yeah.
So will it work? I don't know. But I can see the plan. I can see that he's following the plan. There's nothing bizarre happening here, other than, of course, if you're looking at the details too closely, that's him throwing deals backwards and forwards, as you would in any negotiation.
Yeah, I think too what's happened here is people have absolutely been blindsided by the fact that an actual politician has actually followed through on things he's been saying he would do for years, and they're just not used to that as well. And I think the reality is here, like we are in, the truth of it is we have been in a type of cold war with China for quite some time now, yet the rest of the world, it seems, has been playing this absurd game of let's pretend. And finally, it feels like Trump is just sort of saying, okay, let's just pull back the mask and call it what it is, and let's actually respond in kind and try and secure now before it all goes pear-shaped, because it's not really, they don't have unlimited time to deal with this kind of problem before China actually becomes the dominant player in all of this.
Exactly. And that's what it comes down to. Does America remain in its position? And if it wants to remain in that position, it needs to be able to bring back some of its manufacturing capability. It needs to be able to become a big exporter on its own. You're looking at 300 million people here. You're looking at the wealthiest country on earth. You're looking at, you know, when we talk about the world economy, if the United States president can completely crash the world economy, it's not really a world economy. It's the American economy. And so we're just a little player in the American economy. Yeah. And obviously for them, and I'm not saying if this is good for New Zealand, but for them, it makes sense to retain that. And there may be a lot of short-term pain involved in that, and it may take many years to play out. And of course, the question is, does he have that time?
Yeah.
You know, talking about manufacturing, well, that'll take years to get going.
You've got to gear up for it.
And it's that same problem that we have in New Zealand, to give a local example, with, say, the oil and gas industries, mining and drilling. Yes, you have Shane Jones doing all of this great work trying to set up New Zealand industry. New Zealand, she's talking about New Zealand coal at the moment, getting New Zealand coal mined, having the New Zealand grid powered on New Zealand coal instead of Indonesian coal. But these things take years to ramp up. Mm. And then if the next government is going to come along and delete it, well, then it's very difficult to get these companies to actually commit. And it's possible. People need certainty for business. Mm. And so it's a question of, can you establish that certainty? Can you do it quickly enough? And can you maintain it long enough to make a difference, where it then becomes impossible for another player later down the track to undo it? So you see this with Trump as well. He's moving quite quickly, very early on in his presidency. He wants to make the most of these 4 years. If this 90-day sort of tariff window is stuck to, we'll see. You know, it should mean that everything is settled smoothly 90 days from now. The tariffs kick in and stay at the levels that he said. And whatever happens to China, we'll have to wait and see. And then that means that he's got a good number of years to sort of bed in this particular policy before either, you know, they may lose the White House in 3.5 years. Mm. You may get J.D. Vance for 8 years after that, right? So he may have 12 years, he may only have 4 years. But at least he's committing to it, and he's committing to it early, and he's committing to it properly. He's not messing around.
Yeah. Do you think the media have a responsibility here to report just a little bit more calmly? Because I've just seen nothing but breathlessness, even here in New Zealand. Like, they're live tweeting and live blogging, and the reason I say that is because the markets are involved. So on the one hand, they claim they're the people who really care about the markets and economic stability, but then they seem to have completely ignored the fact that they would absolutely know that their coverage absolutely can spook a market very, very easily.
Yes, the coverage is part of the spectacle here.
Yeah.
Talking about media and responsibility, I wouldn't put those two words in the same sentence.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't think that's possible. Because they do report a lot of fake news as part of this as well, right? There has been fake news reported about the tariffs being suspended at one point, and then the market spiked very quickly, and then it dropped again. So the thing is, people react quite quickly with their capital, like the liquid capital in these stock exchanges. There are people who are basically gambling in real time, and there are people who are, of course, investing long term. So I can be open about most of my investments are in Bitcoin. I'm a Bitcoiner, don't have time for the stocks. but it's like, I'm not buying and selling every 5 minutes, right? I'm thinking 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, retirement, grandchildren, whatever. To me, it just maybe is, okay, the market's dropped a bit. Maybe now's a good time. You know, this little bit of money I'd set aside, maybe I'll buy in a little bit extra now, get a little bit more of a long-term advantage. But for most people, it's they shouldn't be buying and selling stuff in the market at the moment. And so the only risk really is that if you have, say, some elderly couple who don't understand economics who are looking at this and saying, oh, the market's crashing, I'd better change my stock portfolio to conserve, you know, like, yes, I'd cash out, basically. That would be the worst thing to do. So that's that happens all the time when you have these market crashes. You see people think, oh, I've lost my money, I'd better cash out. It's like, no, you haven't lost your money until you sell. So it's all unrealized.
Never sell low.
So there is a risk of people listening to the media and panicking and selling stuff that they shouldn't be selling, of course, but that applies to every move in the market up and down, no matter what the crisis is. So I think people just need to understand that the market, that the media doesn't have any responsibility whatsoever when it comes to anything. Don't ever trust the media. Should they be a little bit more calm? Yes, but I think that's an impossible thing to ask, because the media, they make their money from clicks, from traffic. They make their money from things happening.
Yeah,
and, rage. And outrage, especially a lot of negative stuff, unfortunately. So it's not a fixable problem.
Is there a bit of hypocrisy being exposed here, do you think? Like, I'm thinking about people on the left who for, well, probably over two decades now at least, but some even more than that, who have, you know, I'm against corporate greed and the system is a mess and we've got to do something to redistribute market wealth. And all of a sudden, someone actually does what you actually need to do that. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, you can't do that. And then also you contrast, I heard someone the other day talking about the COVID shutdown. They shut down the whole economy for COVID. But here's someone who's not even going that far. And all of a sudden, it's like, no, you can't do that.
I have seen identical talking points from like open socialist, Trotskyist kind of communist people and conservative people and libertarian people and, you know, ostensibly so. I've seen identical talking points from all of these people about how this is bad and about how suddenly everybody from these communists to these libertarians to these centrists suddenly have the exact same political like economic opinions. Yeah. It's quite absurd to me. Of course, there are some people who are logical and consistent, but there seems to be a lot of, as you say, people who've just lost their minds and gone crazy.
Yeah.
And yes, it's hypocrisy. But if you look at those people, you think, okay, make a mental note to not take anything seriously from that person again.
Yeah. I think I'd love to hear your take on this. I think there might be a generational divide in this too. Like, my wife was asking me about this and I was saying, look, the boomer generation, they actually were people who are now in a better position in the market with stocks and houses and everything else. And unfortunately, a lot of younger people feel like the ladder was pulled up behind them. So they don't have that advantage and they're paying all this money. They're not earning that much in wages. House prices are just off the charts. And so they're looking at this going, well, you know what? We've been subjugated by this economic system. We're happy to watch the whole thing burn. And they're not quite anarchists about it, but they're like, well, the situation we're in is not better or worse regardless of what happens on the stock market, you know?
I can understand that because, like I said, a stock, so I don't have any stocks. What do I care if the stock market collapses? Obviously, there can be ramifications downstream from that. You want to be careful that because you know, if the stock market crash means that there's an economic downturn and a depression and people lose their jobs, well, then it can have a big effect on young people, right? Or if inflation starts going through the roof again, then as a young person, you'd be badly affected. But in this particular case, what's clearly a short-term market downturn. That's why you're seeing this generational divide. But I think even the older people shouldn't be very upset. I mean, in the last 5 years, they've had their portfolios double, like the stock markets, the housing market, not quite double in the last 5 years. But anyway, it's the massive gains have been seen in the last 5 years. In the last, if you go 10 years, 20 years, astronomical, what those older generations have been able to accumulate. If you lose 10% of your unrealized gains, that's 20%. Young people are not going to care that much. Of course, they're going to look at that and say, well, this is important, right? It's important to have this realignment. In particular, if you're American, of course, like I say, this may not necessarily be good for New Zealand. Who knows?
Yeah.
But if you're an American, for sure, you're a young guy in America, there's no downside to this for you.
No, that's right. I mean, even me, I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know, I said to my wife last night, actually, I said, if we had to endure pain in order to ensure that our kids could pay less, like for housing, then I'd endure that pain, you know, because I'm not here for myself primarily. And as much as I look at it and go, oh my gosh, it would be freaky and awful, I recognize there's, you know, there's more than just me and my well-being in this. And I think
I'm a big advocate for New Zealand house prices to come down, for instance. And I'm probably one of the rare people my age who owns a house.
Yeah.
If the house prices cut in half by 50% overnight tomorrow, I wouldn't be upset, right? Even though I'd lose like half my net worth and be in all kinds of financial trouble, I would still see that as part of the common good. It would be part of that, and it would be part of an intergenerational good on the whole, even though, as you say, it would cause massive short-term pain for a lot of people, and myself included in that case, and even you.
There is a bit of an ignorance about the market here too. It does seem that well, certainly right now, a lot of people are talking as if the market is like an infallible controller, like a thermostat rather than a measure like a thermometer, which the market's telling you what's happening. And people tend to, I did another interview today or yesterday where I talked about this, where people do tend to adjust their trading behaviors based on conditions. So if this is the new law, okay, we'll adjust to that. Uncertainty's a problem. But if you got, okay, well, these are the new tariff laws, this is what it means, I'll buy and sell this way now, whereas I used to do it a different way previously, and the market responds, right? Whereas people are treating, it seems to me, the market like it's somehow a switch or like a control mechanism that's infallible and it tells you, you know, doom and gloom is coming.
Yes, you're exactly right. And this is perhaps a common misunderstanding on the market, but the overall situation is that the liquid capital, or where people are investing their money, where people are speculating, they'll simply change their habits if the rules change, and the market corrects, and the money moves somewhere else, and everybody's lives go on. Obviously, there are winners and losers whenever that happens, but. Say, to make a local comparison to the New Zealand house prices, for instance, New Zealand's economy is often described as a housing market, you know, with a country attached to it. Say the government decided to do something drastic, something Trumpian in New Zealand, like put massive taxes on people investing, you know, buying investment properties. Mm. And so if you're a landlord, suddenly you'd have to pay all this extra money. But what's going to happen is that those people are going to sell properties. People are going to stop doing housing investments. The housing market will basically collapse, and house prices would collapse down 50%. But most of these people who take their money out, well, they go and put it somewhere else. They just go and buy something else. People who are saving money or deciding what to do with their investments would simply move their money into a part of the economy where they're going to make money based on the new rules, assuming the new rules, again, are consistent and not going to change all the time. There's not a huge amount of uncertainty. So you'd have that upheaval as people reallocate capital, and then life would go on.
Yeah. Elon Musk didn't seem to be too happy. Well, there was indication certainly on Twitter that he's not a fan of tariffs. What's your take on that?
I think it's actually good to have some disagreement and to see some internal power struggles in Trump's administration. That means that there's a lively coalition there. There are lively interests. And it does seem like a few of the kind of the tech bros who were supporting Trump, some of them cracked and openly made some very negative statements. I saw some of the other ones, though, double down on their support and say, you know, trust the plan, basically. This is all going to work out. And so there seem to be some mixed reactions at the moment with the way things have settled. I think Elon Musk seems quite happy with where it's going to land, because it seems, as I said, it seems to be landing at the place where I would have expected things to land before all this happened. I was like, good, he's going to have some standard tariffs across the board. Most countries are going to get treated the same, and China in particular is going to get hit hard, because this is about a trade war with China, rather than having a kinetic war with China. It's just going to be a trade war, fingers crossed. Yeah. And so a lot of these people seem to be calming down now as well. Saying, okay, cool, this is what we signed on for. You know, we signed on for some tariffs across the board, and in particular, a massive trade war with China. We knew that was a risk. You know, that was something we calculated into our support for Trump. What they didn't calculate into was Trump's out of the deal and the chaos that would cause in the markets for 5 or 6 days now. And like I said, a lot of these people, that's their money, right? That's their life, and so they panicked in that situation. They were very unhappy with that kind of behavior. And of course, if you're doing a lot of international trade, if you're buying a lot of goods from overseas, you're not going to be very happy with this, no matter, you know, like you are losing out. So it's a question of, are you like, and somebody like Elon Musk isn't, like Elon Musk is very American focused, right? Making American cars, American rockets. So it's less of an impact on him. But I think for some of the other people around Elon Musk, a lot of his friends, they'll be doing a lot of shenanigans with China, and they'll be cutting deep. There are a lot of people that are going to get hurt by this, but they're going to have to accept that that it's necessary.
I guess the deeper question, there's one other question I want to ask you about, a separate issue, just quickly before we wrap this episode up. But I guess the deeper question that's worth really landing on with all of this is, what even is the purpose of trade or the purpose of a market, etc.? I'll give you an example. I saw a tweet that someone had posted just yesterday, and they said this, and this is very typical. It's just basic economics that tariffs are bad because they lead to increased prices on goods. Like Trump or not like him, it's not good policy. And that to me is the classic dogma, but it seems to me this just assumes that in actual fact, increased prices on goods is always wrong, and therefore decreasing prices is always good. And to me, that completely fails to appreciate a bigger question, a picture of virtue and ethics and society and culture in your market.
Yes, on the particular point of, say, taxes and tariffs, I'm writing something up for goodoil.news for Saturday morning, my subscriber column for them, around why I love tariffs and comparing taxes, because all taxes, as I said at the beginning, are punishment. So tariffs raise prices of goods as a tax, but GST raises the prices of goods as a tax. Income tax raises the price of goods as a tax, excise duties. So I actually consider tariffs to be the most moral form of taxation because you can actually avoid them if you don't want to pay them. Mm. If you say, I don't want to pay tariffs, well, you can buy local.
Yeah, it's trans-
and you don't need, and then you don't have to pay that tax. Mm. Sure, you're still paying increased prices, but you're if the taxes are being collected in New Zealand instead, in the American context, then at the end of the day, you're still paying higher prices, of course. So, and that's where this comes down to, as you say, decreasing prices of goods is always seen as virtuous. Well, why do we need to have our junk made in China? Why don't we just legalize slave labor in New Zealand and have build sweatshops in New Zealand and employ slaves in New Zealand, and they just make the cheap junk here, right? The reason the cheap junk is made in China, not in New Zealand, is because it's illegal to make the cheap junk in New Zealand.
That's right. Exactly.
That's it. That's really it. It's illegal to create the kind of economic conditions that they have in China that allows them to create the cheap junk like that. Mm. And so a lot of people, when they think of international trade, like, oh, yes, it's absolved me of all moral responsibility. And I don't, you know, I mean, for most of us, like I said, we don't think too much about it. But if you did, you ask yourself, hey, if that cheap thing you're buying from China, which you are going to do because it's cheap, you know, you think you need it. But if that was being made in the next door to where you live in a giant sweatshop that was employing people for 5 cents an hour, living, you know, working 12 hours and being dirt poor and whatever, maybe suddenly there would be moral outrage in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So, and this is kind of arguments that left wing people have made for fair trade. I always remember fair trade.
Fair trade. That's right.
The thing the lefties were really big on, and being against the sweatshops and so on. And of course, the people who support free trade are saying, well, hey, in the long term, we're lifting economic conditions in these countries, right? Yes, they're doing slave labor and stuff, but these people are dirt poor anyway, and we're giving them an opportunity to rise up, like the Industrial Revolution, right? Like our ancestors, as you know, we're like 7 years old, slaving away and getting their fingers chopped off in the factories and inhaling smoke and like dying, children dying in the mines.
They'll get there though one day.
And so our ancestors had to do that, and we're just helping these people do that. You know, so it's even altruistic.
Well,
helping them.
Look, Diwa, I've been hearing that story for decades, and it's still the same story that's being told. You know, I was hearing that story 35 years ago. You know,
Whichever way you fall on this, I'm not making any particular a personal application, but I think you need to think about this when as you say, as people say, well, lower prices are inherently good, we'll maybe think about the what's required to have lower prices.
I want to ask you one quick question to wrap us up tonight about a completely separate issue. Before I do that, folks, if you want to hear part two, and in part two we're going to be talking about the Benjamin Doyle scandal, we're going to be talking about the Auckland Museum inclusion and diversity hijacking of Anzac Day of all days, treaty principle bill, so there's lots to talk about. But you have to do that behind the paywall. So that means if you want to hear that, go to patreon.com/leftfootmedia. The link is in the show notes, and become a $5 monthly patron. If you do, you will get to hear that. Diwa, the question I want to ask you really quickly, just to close this episode out, is a couple of days ago, Zelensky came out and said, we have captured two Chinese nationals fighting in Ukraine for Russia. Now, as of this evening, he's claimed that they've got 155 of them, at least, fighting. Do you think this changes anything? He's definitely trying to drum this up as, come on, join the war. But I don't see this really changing much. Do you?
No, I don't think it's going to have much of an impact. But it's funny that you mentioned this. I did see it very briefly and I didn't pay any attention to it. But then I saw somebody post translations of like WeChat discussions in China.
Yeah.
And quite a few of the comments, based on the 125% Trump tariffs, quite a few of the comments were guys who said, oh, I've just lost all my money that I've put into this business to make the cheap junk to sell to the Americans. I'm bankrupt. I'm going to go and join the Russian army and fight in Ukraine now.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's those people. I don't know if those people are being sarcastic, You may, if there's an increase in Chinese nationals fighting for Russia and in Ukraine, because they have their, you know, sort of their volunteers and mercenaries, much in the same way that we have New Zealanders fighting on the front lines for Ukraine, people for whatever reason, usually for glory, and people who young guys who want to go to war. I'm not knocking that in particular,
but
you may be seeing more of that as a consequence, as an unintended consequence of all of this.
Well, a lot of men and not many women in China, so that might well be a factor too, but we'll see what happens. But I really don't think this changes much. It certainly seems Zelensky is still on the back foot.
He's trying to put the attention back on himself, of course, because if he loses the media cycle, it's over for Ukraine, right?
Yeah,
it's been that from the beginning.
Yeah, well, some might say it already is. Dewa, how do people follow you?
You can go to rightminds.nz and follow me there. You can subscribe to the newsletter, get any of my free writing in your inbox. And I'll also do at least weekly appearances on RCR, rcr.media. And every Friday afternoon, I do a weekly roundup with William McGimsey, and I do a bunch of other interviews every few weeks. So go along and support RCR as well. You can support goodoil.news and, of course, support Brendan here. And make sure you come back on Monday to listen to the other half of this.
Dewa, thanks again, my friend. To everyone else who is not going to be joining us behind the paywall because you're not a patron, unfortunately, we will bid you adieu. Don't forget, live by goodness, truth, and beauty, not by lies. And we'll see you next time on The Dispatches with Dewa. When I was young.